It's November 4th, 2013, and you're listening to Free to Play episode 56. Remember the 4th of this month, because this the date that this podcast is happening right now. I'm Brian Belita. I'm joined by Mark Bradshaw.
Also remember, because this is the day Call of Duty the next one came out. The most important American holiday of all time.
Tomorrow.
Oh, man. Call of Duty is a national holiday.
That's the 5th.
Oh, that is the 5th, right?
Well, so, the people outside the stores right now. Like, if you go to a GameStop, there are people outside the GameStop.
Waiting for Call of Duty.
Waiting for Call of Duty.
Well, those people are terrible.
Also, Imran Khan.
It's an hour later than it should be, or hour earlier. I don't know, I'm tired.
I time traveled. I stayed up watching an amazing babysitter, like, camp horror slasher flick. With
oh, is that the that we
guys.
Watched Camp Sleepaway?
Yeah. Yeah, that was Camp Sleepaway, because it was like 1:10, and I was like, we just, oh my goodness, somebody just took a baseball bat to the dome, I think. Mark, did you just take a baseball bat to the dome?
That's totally what happened, and it wasn't anything really boring like an empty soda bottle falling to the floor in the disaster.
Anyway, no. So
let
we
the bottles
up...
hit the floor!
Oh, no.
That was good. Do you remember what the name of the movie was, Imran?
Camp Sleepaway.
Oh, Camp, it was Camp Sleepaway.
We watched Camp Sleepaway 2, which was, of course, the highlight of the Camp Sleepaway franchise.
Camp Sleepaway series,
there's like four of them.
Apparently, a five? I thought there was... Anyway, so we stayed up, and at 2 o'clock, we traveled back in time to 1 o'clock.
You know, this is one of those years where, like, it's been this way for the past couple years. The entire daylight savings time mechanic is now so automatic that you don't notice it. Like, I didn't realize the whole daylight savings time thing happened until, like, the next morning.
Right, because phones and everything.
Yeah. All that stuff changes, and then I go downstairs and, like, my microwave and my
yes,
oven.
Yes, exactly. Microwave,
like,
those are the only two things.
And I don't think to change them, because I'm like, surely those things have changed, too.
Well, in 6 months, they'll be back on time again, so it's not a huge deal.
You know what drives me nuts? The things that should know better... that are certainly powerful enough to be able to connect to the internet and find out what time it is, but don't. Like any Nintendo product and the PlayStation 3.
Yeah. Wait, oh, does it play? No. Yeah, I guess that my 3DS didn't either. Because I remember I logged into Animal Crossing today, and it was like, it's 3 p.m., and it was only 2 p.m. in real life. But anyways, that's Matt Pierce.
Hello. I only noticed daylight savings time because Gran Turismo bitches when your time doesn't match with the server.
Well, now you have moon time.
Moon, yes. Do we have moon time? Can we... What? Wait, what is moon time?
Gran Turismo 6 has a photo mode on the moon.
Also, apparently, a lunar rover, if joystick is to be believed.
But you can't actually race on the moon, which is like the disappointment of
that's,
the century.
That's super sad. Can we just all operate off moon time? Like, what time is it on the moon right now?
Listen, it takes the Gran Turismo team 6 years to produce a game set on Earth. Do you have any idea what they would have to go through to accurately model moon gravity? Or moon racing? Because they wouldn't settle
they'd
for,
have
like...
To actually...
Well, it's easy to model moon gravity. You just, you know... reduced to a sixth of the gravity.
No, you don't.
Yeah,
understand
it's
that.
Like a multiplier.
They'd have to take a team up there and test every single Gran Turismo car on the moon.
and because he's a crazy man, he would actually like record the sounds for all the cars on the moon, despite the issue where like there would be
there's
no sound.
Atmosphere
or internal combustion. Both of those things wouldn't happen, but he would do that. That's what that team was capable of doing.
Okay, they also
they should do that. They should make a moon level that's like that go kart track, but like in a dome on the moon. So it's 1/6 gravity, but you have air.
Yes.
Or they could still pull this off. It's just like you have just the lunar rovers, and you have the Tesla cars, and you have like just all electric cars. Now the problem with this theory is that the moment you go over a hill, you die because you're in space. But you can go like for like 3 minutes, you're all right.
So either that, or maybe they just have to build like a quarter mile long. Aircraft or airplane of some sort, like some sort of cargo plane, and do the thing where you just drop the plane and it kind of creates zero gravity.
Yeah, but you can only race for like 30 seconds and you're right. Constantly, yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess.
So the solution to all of this is slingshots.
Slingshots. What?
Just giant slingshots that, like, you start the race and then they just propel you across.
No, the solution for all this is for someone to release another damned F-Zero game already.
Sheenan is making an F-Zero clone.
God, fuck that last F-Zero Rainbow Roads virtual road level. Oh my God, the SCRGX, whatever the GameCube one was.
I doubt I ever got that far.
I did. That was a rough game. But that's an F-Zero game for you, I guess.
I forget exactly at what point I decided to give up on that, but there was a point where I decided that that game was more of a man than I, and I had to tap out.
Did you submit your women to it? And
Yeah, I did. It actually is owner of my car, so I just like give it to it.
on the moon. Yeah. So, all right. So what happened? Oh God, this is so dumb. I'm
We
looking
want
at
to start with this stuff, or do we want to go with Gunpoint?
Ooh, I'm happy to talk about Gunpoint, and you like just beat it 2 hours ago. So let's talk about Gunpoint. That was my pick for the Illiterates Book Club over these last 2 weeks, and we've been playing it. It's a short game, which was handy.
It's probably one of the best stealth games I've played this year.
Oh, that makes me happy to
Well,
hear you say that.
that's kind of a qualified statement, though, because, I mean, how many stealth games were out this year that were really good?
To this and Last of Us.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I,
But
if this
still.
game were longer, I would say, okay, no, I'll say it, this is a better stealth game than The Last of Us.
Sure, but the Last of Us isn't terribly great as a video game. I think the better comparison for this would be something like Mark of the Ninja.
Okay, so
That's
hold up. So for anyone who doesn't know, Gunpoint is a game made by Tom Francis, who's a guy that used to work for PC Gamer and kind of broke off on his own to make a video game, and he made it and it did super well. And it's kind of a 2D stealth puzzle action game. Ah, it's not really action.
It's kind of action, but it's
Puzzle
with
for me
I
more than
guess it's
action.
puzzle platforming with kind of the hook of the game, as it were, being this thing called Crosslink mode. The game is sort of set in like a cyberpunk noir future, just very lightly, I guess. And you have this ability called the Crosslink, which lets you kind of access all the wiring of the buildings that you're breaking into. The whole game is centered around breaking into and stealing stuff from buildings. And this Crosslink mode lets you do things like, wire a light switch to a door that you couldn't previously open, or a light switch to a elevator, which will ding and attract a guard or something like that. So it's got some really neat things going on.
Or you can
And
like wire like a security camera to an electrical socket. So when he like walks in the field of view of the security camera, it lights up the electrical socket and kills him.
Or you could wire one of the things that I did on so on my very first playthrough of Gunpoint, I did 0 kills. I did a 0 kill run.
That is crazy. That like had to be
Yeah, or
enormously
I don't know if it
frustrating.
was zero. No, yeah. I think you can do 0 kill. I don't think there's
Yeah,
anyone
you
you
can.
have to kill in the game.
Well, there's no way you have to kill, but there are a couple of times where I did things that I didn't realize would kill
Yes,
people.
yeah,
Like I
like
opened a trap door and they fell one floor and died.
right,
It's like
or
there was one where like there was a level where you had to set it up so there's like this Rube Goldberg type machine where a guard walking through a motion detector and opens a door somewhere else, and I forgot to unhook it at some point, so he opened a door on another guard and killed him.
Right, the door just slammed into the guard's face.
Did it actually kill him or just knock him out? Because I don't think they're dead unless there's like a pool of blood by them.
I think that counts as a
I
kill.
think
I'm
it
not
does
sure.
actually. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not
I think
100%.
anything where they don't get back up is a kill.
Yeah. No, but I want to say, first off, that's one of the great things about this game is these kind of really crazy Rube Goldberg things that happen in it. Just these hilarious mistakes that you kind of get up and keep playing from. Or, they have a quick save system that you can go back like 3 seconds, 5 seconds, 9 seconds, which I'm probably pretty thankful for.
Yeah.
I kind of find it funny that sometimes it'll be go back 0 seconds and you go back
Right.
and shoot yourself again
Yes, exactly.
over and over and over.
But no. So the playthrough I did for Illiterates Book Club here, I wanted to kind of just burn through the game quickly. I wanted to do an ultra violent run. So I was just diving onto people. You have this pair of pants in the game that lets you do kind of like an arced jump, just a super jump, basically a Hulk junk, a
And
jump,
the
and
in And the takeaway from the pants is that you suffer no fall damage regardless of how far you fall.
yeah.
But
But
you do
so.
make noise.
You yeah so but no so what I did was I had wired a I forgot what I wired a there are two guards on the same floor kind of facing each other and I wired the guards the light switch on the floor they were on to the guard's gun, and then I wired a light switch on the floor I was on to the light switch. So I turned off their light switch, and when the guard went to go turn off the light switch, it fired his gun and he killed the other guy. So you can do some pretty great things like that.
That is a fitting death worthy of the Sleepaway Camp franchise. Well done.
Well, no, and so one of the things I just put up that we're talking about it tonight on the Night Tribute Twitter, and Mike Lemieux asked us if we feel more could have been done with the game, given how it just sort of drops the mic and leaves.
Let's go ahead and put this warning in now that Gunpoint is not a game with a particularly involved story. Are some quote unquote twists. Yeah, and we're going to go ahead and talk about this because you can get on different results.
Yeah.
That's to say it's the short game, it doesn't have much of a story. That's not to say it doesn't have good writing. While the writing is completely incidental to the game itself, it's literally
fucking hilarious.
It's just a bunch of little text screens like in between levels. Yeah.
Like the opening scene is your character flies out of the 13th floor of a building, slams into the side of another building, lands and gets up and just kind of goes, I guess these pants
work. And then gets a phone call from the person in the building you just slammed into, saying, "Hey, did you just fall out a window?" You just fell out the window.
He kind of plays it off coyly. So it's really funny writing, and I mean, overall, a very charming game, just visually and everything else. There's a lot more in the game that could have been explored.
I wonder about that.
I think when it starts getting really interesting, it just sort of stops.
Right.
Here's my theory on Gunpoint's length. I think the designer had a bunch of very tightly conceived puzzle ideas, right? Mm-hmm. And he went through those ideas, and he didn't want to backtrack or put any kind of filler that just recreated those exact same ideas again, and he just stopped. And I think that's commendable in a sort of way. He does what he wanted to do. He tells the story he wanted to tell. He explored what he wanted to explore. And then he just walks away from it. And that's a big problem with a lot of big budget games nowadays, where they just shove 10 or 20 hours worth of filler into a game that would have been easier, much more enjoyable if it was just 5 hours long.
Right.
See, I don't think that this needs to have a bunch of filler, but I think there should have been a bit more, another two or three, maybe four puzzles. Because there's a thing where we're working to save this girl, and then all of a sudden, nope, she's dead.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
I wonder if
that I like about the length of it is I'm starting to wonder if I go back and try different story. Try different options in the dialogue. Will that open up different story branches?
So as far as I know, I think the one big change there might be a different mission that you can get depending on how you play. But I know on the final level, depending on I think the choice that you make, if you choose to set the guy free and to get the other one, I forget what the exact decision is. But either the assassin will be there in the final level right before you get to the last guy. It's not Gessler, is it? No,
it was Gessler for me.
Okay, yeah. No, it is Gessler then. Yeah, I think it always is. So either the assassin's there or the assassin's not.
Yeah,
and this is the assassin who has the same bullfrog crazy pants that you do. So what happens if you get up there and he's there? The second you get out of the stairwell, he'll dive at you and you'll both go flying out the window.
So did you kill him or just punch him?
So the assassin you have to kill.
You know, you don't. You can punch him out.
I had a gun, and I just kept punching him.
Well, the assassin?
Yeah.
I kept clicking,
eventually gets him off.
Maybe I didn't try clicking hard enough, because it just kept fading my vision, and I thought you just had to shoot him.
So did you kill Gessler, or did you not?
Gessler, no. No, I just kept punching him.
Okay, see, what I did, because the moment you go in there, he knocks you down at the door, and then, stands at you with a gun.
Right.
So I had to go
around.
You didn't
unwire the door?
No, I went around the building and I came in from the other side. No, I didn't. I made a distraction on the other side. I shot a gun that made him look to that direction. Then I just walked in and punched him out.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I just I kicked the door down on top of him and knocked him out.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I didn't even think about doing that.
Yeah, I didn't think about kicking that door down for some reason. What I did is I rigged it up to the camera. And so I set my dive up so I would fly through the door through the vision of the camera. That would open the door, and I'd fly through, and hopefully the power that I have that some shots miss would come into play, and then I'd knock him down. And if
I tried that with some enemies, and as soon as the door opened, they just shot me mid jump.
Yeah,
sucks.
Some of the brutal. So you can right. So the bullfrog pants let you jump on an enemy, and then you can punch them to knock them down. And you only really need one punch, but you can keep punching.
Yeah.
So if you
The game begs you to stop at some
the
point.
game begs you to stop, and then at some point it starts giving you a count. So it's like, congratulations, you've punched Gessler 136 times, and I think it goes up to 150 before it actually stops.
My favorite thing is like how they said, "There's no achievement for this. You can go ahead and stop now." And like 30 punches later, it's like, "Fine, just take the achievement."
Take an achievement and stop punching him. Yeah.
So this game had a lot of really actually funny achievements.
It did. Yeah, it really did. What was the I know I saw Mark on Twitter spouting about ludonarrative dissonance.
Oh no, that was me.
Oh, was that you, Matt? I'm
Well,
sorry.
first I was commenting on how the story makes absolutely no sense, and like the game is really good, but the story, like the problem I was having with the story is that I didn't realize how much it didn't matter. So I was actually trying to follow all the plot threads, and it just got way too confusing way too
I think
quickly.
I think they're worth following. I mean, they're there. I mean, it kind
Yeah,
of
they're worth following,
reveals
but I
like.
thought like there were going to be like serious decisions to be made later.
Oh, okay,
And then
yeah.
like you end up getting these things like, hey, we saw some
I mean,
security footage and there's some guy in a trench coat. Oh, really? Is
Oh,
that
really?
true?
Imagine that. Yeah.
Well, for me, I kept doing. Did you guys erase the footage, or did
Yes.
you? Okay, so what I did is when the police chief asked me,
One of
I
my
gave
places.
him the actual footage, and he said it was, oh, that was a test. You wouldn't have given it to me if you were the guy.
Yeah, I gave that.
It's funny if you what was the one? Yeah, I think like you mock the police chief at some point. You know, you're like, so wait, so the police chief can't walk into the police station to get the policing that he put there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
And then he
yes,
says,
you
no, because it's the
can.
last guy before we got six shots in the chest.
Yeah.
Well, he thinks it's like this massive corruption thing, and it turns out all these guys are just lazy and incompetent.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean the whole story plays out very much like a, I don't know, like a 50s noir film. You know, it's story that's there. But I mean I know Matt, you were talking about like serious decisions, decisions,
Yeah,
and
like three levels in, I thought there were going to be serious decisions. And
right.
then
I
later I
mean
just kind of went with it and then saw the achievement for ludonarrative
yeah.
dissidence.
Yeah. I mean even if the writing it wasn't like funny if it was. I don't know that the game mechanics would lend itself to something serious. I mean, you're hopping around these levels like, I mean, like a bullfrog, like, you know, some sort of super Spider-Man climbing on the sides of walls. I guess that's really it. I mean, so
Well, yeah, the
maybe it could. And as far as the mechanics go, I know Mark was saying, you know, it's a good thing that he kind of, you know, just put it down and allowed you to kind of maybe explore on your own, kind of beating levels in different ways. The game lent itself really well to that. Well, on certain levels, others it's very straightforward. But
I
what I
don't
haven't done
know.
is I haven't checked out. The game came with a level editor, and
Yeah.
I've checked out some of the stuff that people have made because there's probably some really amazing stuff.
Is there actually stuff that people have made? Because
Oh
when you get
yeah,
to like the community page for it doesn't actually list like any map packs or anything.
it doesn't. It should. I or I
Maybe it
don't.
has to be done in game.
Yeah. Well,
Okay.
yeah. Well,
Well,
that's
no,
what I
there's not
don't
like a
know if it
workshop
is.
for it, basically.
Yeah, the website basically, or the guy's website basically says, oh, they're basically just text files, so you can share them any way you want.
So
So I don't
I
think
would.
there's like a place to share them. You just give
Well,
them
yeah, I
to.
don't know if there's anything built in the game that lets you browse levels. I'm not sure.
That's kind of a shame because as
I
short
haven't
as
looked.
this game is and like as many as ideas as it could explore, this is actually something where I would go to the workshop and just take a look at it. If it's just like
Yeah.
a bunch of text
Yeah. I mean
files, I'm not as interested in doing so.
it is a short game, but we should mention that it is only like $10.
Yeah.
If you like the
It's
regular
also a
edition.
very good game.
It's very clean. It's very crisp. I mean, it's I don't know if that those are the right words that I'm looking for. It's not like there aren't any bugs. It's very, yeah, fuck.
Condensed?
So
Yeah.
is there a way for the girl to not die? Not Selena, the one who was falsely accused.
Right, the one in I don't think so.
The girl that dies at the very beginning of the game?
No.
Oh,
The one
no.
who gets framed.
The one who calls you from prison and texts you in all lowercase and at one point you say, you know, it's like, oh my God, it's gone three sentences without, you know,
Right.
exclamation points. Are you sure you're okay?
Yeah. Because I felt bad about that.
Yeah, I don't think there is.
Yeah,
It's entirely your fault that she dies.
yeah.
Not entirely. I mean,
It's heavily implied though that she gets that it wasn't a real suicide. That
is it?
there are, I think there's a laptop you can find. that has some text in it that basically says, yeah, we're not sure if this was a suicide or if she was murdered and it was made to look like a suicide.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, sometimes those little side laptops are really easy to miss.
I'll be honest, I skipped over the actual, I got the laptops, but I skipped over the actual text they give you because 99% of them were just right beside a guard and I was just like clicking through as fast as possible.
Oh, trying to not get off the guard. Yeah.
Or just being like really edgy.
Yeah. God. So one of my favorite things about this game is the hacking animation.
Yeah.
I don't, it's just, it's such a cool, it's just,
Everything's like that. There's not an element to this game that does not have some little bit of quirkiness or style to it. Yeah.
No, that hacking animation with like all the information that flies up on the tiny, I mean, this is like a small kind of, you know, sprite-based pixel art game. I shouldn't say that because I don't know what it was made in. It might have not been sprites. It might have been fucking a thing. I don't know. But anyway, so that little animation is just really, really cool.
I like that you can't just shoot your way into things because the second you use a gun, a sniper will come. Or not the second, but 15 seconds later. And if a sniper comes, you're basically fucked.
Well, really? I did not know that.
I didn't know that because I never used the gun. Because
me neither.
I had to use the gun because, like...
Was. Okay, so when the assassin tackled me out the window, I used the gun. And there was this countdown. And I was like, what? This is the first time I've seen this. What the fuck is
if
this?
If the countdown expires, there was a... police officer posted at the exit. So you just couldn't get to the exit.
Without killing him.
No,
he's at the exit just facing you.
Yeah, the second you come out, he will shoot you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So after I shot the assassin after he tackled me out the window and we fell, you know, 10 floors, the timer started going down. I was like, oh shit, maybe like does Gessler know? And so I was just climbing this
suddenly
building.
Metroid? What's going on?
Right. I was climbing this building as fast as I could to get back up there and tackle and take out Gessler.
And that's why you punch him out instead of shooting him, because otherwise you get the timer.
Yeah. No, that
see, but I figured that out because this brings me to the thing I don't like about this game is when you hit try out on a skill, it takes you to a map and you have to finish that map. You don't have a choice.
You can't hit escape and back out?
No, I tried. It just took me to the menu.
Now, when it says tryout is like a unique map for every skill, because I never did the tryout. I just bought it and just like deal with it if you like it.
Figure it out.
It's like a different, if it's a unique map for every skill then?
Yep, it's to teach you how it works.
Not
but
for
like
every skill, but for like
the ones that have tryout.
I think there's the gun, there's the hush puppy, which lets you break through glass.
Which I could never get to work consistently.
You have to use it in midair. I think there's like a narrow time window where you have to use it.
Right. Like, I don't think you can take off and then immediately click again to keep
it. I thought it was just a thing that was supposed to happen.
No.
I was like, wow, this really didn't make much of an impact at all.
No, you have to actually click to activate it.
Yeah, and there's like a little recharge thing. Like, you can only use it like maybe 3 times per level.
No, that's just the charges, your batteries that you can increase.
Yeah, I didn't even like use batteries at all because I had no idea what they were really for.
Yeah.
To this, I still don't know if I use batteries for anything in this game.
I think that, let's see, so it was to activate the hush puppy, and what else?
I feel like the weapon changing, like you can change guard guns.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if you rig a guard's gun up, maybe that uses one too.
Do you have to use the battery for like knocking down a door?
No, yeah. Pretty sure not. That's So there's a skill in the game that you can buy for like 8,000 of the in-game dollars.
Like you can only really get like near the end of the game.
Yeah, near the very end of the game.
Also, completely breaks the game. It's like I know it's at the very end, but like it just completely destroys any sense of balance in the game.
That's
fine.
Which is why it's amazing.
Yeah, that's another animation that I really really like in this because like your guy runs up and you kick the door and the door kind of bows out and then just. It just kind of fwangs off to the right and flies, does a couple flips to the air, knocking out any guards in the way, and then slides along the ground.
See, it's great because like the last level is a tower that you walk up, and there's plenty of doors in the way, and it's full of professionals who can see in the dark, and they shoot you on sight.
Yeah.
So just breaking open the door, and it just like taking out 4 professionals at once,
sending them out the window.
Yeah.
It's another one of those little things where this game just. It does the little touches like that, just the door like booming outward and sliding backward. The developer didn't have to do that, but it's another one of the little touches that just gives it personality. And it's like the exact opposite of, say, Deadlight, which also played this game.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It just...
I know. I gifted him around that game recently.
Yeah. I haven't played it yet.
Yeah.
Oh man, are you in for a treat? But it's just one of those little things that mark this sort of game as a labor of love by the developer.
Well, that, and so when you beat the game, there's like a series of little, you know, the guy that you play, Conway, Richard Conway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of does like a little, you know, like a voiceover at the end. Of course, it's not a voiceover because it's text, but he's, you know, summing up his story.
He's,
you know,
blogging.
He's blogging, yeah, exactly. And so, and you have options for kind of what you can say, you know. You know, so it'll be the weak hit me like, you know, and then you have, you can pick from three options. You know, in the end, what really matters is, and one of the options is, I got a pair of pants that lets me, you know, kick down doors, or, you know.
Did we all answer that one?
Yes, I did.
I think so. Yeah. So, and so this output's basically just a little URL that, you know, flits between the different options, and it gives you Conway's secret blog that you can link people, that tells you, you know, how much money you earned, how many people you killed, stuff like that. So it's a, just a neat little kind of statistics, funny thing that you can do. It's fun.
So the thing I like that this game really pulled off, clearly we all beat this game. We all got through all the puzzles. This game made me feel like a fucking genius for getting through these puzzles.
But they're not very hard.
I really felt like I had to think.
Yeah, but once you figure, like, clearly we were all able to figure it out. But once you, like, set up a light switch to trigger an elevator to go to another floor so that the sound detector can open a door somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's like, the first time you do that, you feel like you just solved the riddle of Sphinx.
Yeah. Yeah, you really do. You feel like Nick Cage in National Treasure.
Yeah. I feel like if the AI were just like a little bit smarter, this game would be like 10 times more stressful.
If the AI were smarter, this game would be way worse.
The guards are charmingly incompetent.
The guards are just another piece of the puzzle. They're not supposed to be dependable
and predictable, which I think I guess is one of the.
That's what you want out of a guard. As a stealth game.
Yeah.
What annoyed me is when the wiring was not dependable. Like, sometimes I'd wire something to an elevator button, and it would, like a door, and it would just freak out, and the door wouldn't open.
Yeah, so, the elevator stuff never worked right.
So what I found out later, and at least I think this is the case, you have to go from the source to what you wanted to trigger. You can't go the other way. Yeah.
You have to do that because you can chain things.
Yeah.
So, like, you can wire an elevator to a door, which is then wired to a light switch, so that when the elevator
arrives... So, I ran into that sometimes. It was like, okay, I have a setup. Let's kick this into action. And then it didn't work. And I was just like, fuck, gotta reload.
I figured that out. It was just like, sometimes it would just, all the wiring was right, because I'd just do the same thing again and it would work that time. Just like once or twice, occasionally, like it would just not, it just kept repeating doing the same thing over and over, like it was glitching out.
Yeah.
And keep it closed.
I'm also like some of the wiring is finicky like that. And sometimes, like for the doors, like you have a door and then you like have a handprint scanner on either side. Now, the handprint scanner, I've never got to do anything worthwhile.
Only the guards can activate it.
Yeah, but
all you have to do with the handprint scanner is either wire it up to a light so that when the guard tries to escape, he turns off the lights.
Okay. I usually just unhook them entirely.
Yeah.
And you just disconnect them from the doors so that the guard gets trapped.
Yeah, so they can't do anything. No, but I mean, so you can play through the game different ways. I mean, you can play through it completely stealthily. You can use the bullfrog to like hop up onto a ceiling. And I guess you have like suction cup hands, so you can be like kind of monkey barring across just above a guard, tracking back and forth. And what really shows well, because there are some games, you know, that like it's a stealth game, but you can play through it action, you know, like, and it's, you know, it's easier. But I think this found a really good balance on it being challenging, playing through stealthily, maybe more challenging, but then it was also pretty challenging to kind of play through it in an action-oriented way because the guards do shoot on sight. So you have to be very tactical about kind of your attack plan.
I love trapping guards in rooms with doors. I just like just putting them in one place and just closing all the doors around them.
Yeah, there's that one level with like the motion-activated sensors. Yeah. And you can, you know, once you're done with him, he's like, okay, you just walk back and forth in this room now.
I'm done with you.
Yeah, I'm done with you. I'm finished.
So, like, at the end of every level, you're graded on how you perform, basically. And you still get an A+ rating on certain things. On virtually everything I had, I received a rating of thoughtful and like how long it took me to finish. Yeah. Because
if you look at the par times, because they're like 35 seconds on stuff that took me like 5 minutes.
That's crazy. That has to be just like either like insane speed running shit or just killing everyone and not really caring.
Well, I mean, I imagine when you know the actual solution to a puzzle, it doesn't take long at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it will like, never be that short for me because my wheel mouse was way less dependable than it should have been.
I just used Alt.
So
I couldn't get in the habit of that.
I played some of it on an Apple Magic Mouse, and that doesn't have like a scroll wheel that clicks. It's, you know, it's like a touchpad basically. So every time I wanted to switch into the mode, you know, I just like my finger would just have to move a millimeter and just flick back and forth like 10 times.
That was a really weird design decision at this point. Like, just make it like the middle mouse button instead of like scrolling down on the wheel. What point is that really?
Well, that kind of works for me because I use a scroll wheel for any FPS to switch weapons. Yeah. So using it like to switch modes makes sense to me.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. Yeah.
It's one of those things where like the control has to somewhat flow logically too. Like this is an odd example, but in Tales of Zillia, when you're using when you have to use a magic guard, which guards against magic, the character raises their hand up and then you get surrounded in an aura, and that always confused me because the actual command is to like press down and guard.
Oh wow, yeah.
So every time they do it, I get really confused. Like, do I press up because they raise their hand up, or do I press down?
So I
imagine with like flipping on and like a visor or something makes sense on the scroll wheel.
Well, yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I mean, when the first time I played this was on my computer at home, which has just a regular mouse wheel, and I did kind of imagine, you know, Conway, you know, just putting his finger up to a switch on the side of his head and flicking it up or down, which kind of works well with the scroll wheel.
Yeah, this is a really good game.
It's a really good game, and you should absolutely play it. It's $10. You can buy it straight from the dev, gunpointgame.com. It's got some special editions that come with like the soundtrack, the developer commentary. Actually, no, I think that comes in the base game. But yeah, so there's some extra editions if you really want to throw some extra money this guy's way. And I know he's Tom Francis is working on another game right now. I saw him post up like a demo of Grappling Hook in action of some sort. So it'll be interesting to see what he does from here. It's just really cool that he was able to drop his regular job and he put out this game and it did really well. And so good for you, Tom Francis.
We should have had him on for this.
Yeah, I thought about asking him, but saying he's in England is a really bad excuse. So
well, yeah, it would have been like midnight there now. So
yeah, maybe we'll invite him on and for another thing. Yeah. Yeah, so play this game.
So who's absolutely next?
Oh yeah, who's next? Let's see. It was Belita, so now it's Bradshaw. Oh, great. We're back to Bradshaw.
Yeah, back to me. I haven't made up my mind. We'll talk about it later after the podcast. I don't really know what I want to do yet, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, then let's take a break, and we'll prod you and poke you until you come up with something, and then maybe we'll tell people after the break.
Sounds good.
Enjoy this break.
All right. Break.
We're back.
And it's Skyrim.
Shit. I was thinking today that I need a good reason to play Skyrim because I didn't get very far in that game.
Well, it's going to be Skyrim of Streets of Rage 2, so I'll leave it to
you. I remember you messaged me yesterday, was it yesterday, day before, that was like, what did we choose as our 2011 game of the year? And I was like, oh, it was Deus Ex. You're like, I chose Skyrim over Deus Ex?
Yeah, okay, I'm fairly sure I like pushed heavily for Skyrim over Deus Ex, but it's one of those things where you look back on it in, like over like months or years and you realize you're really being an idiot. it's sort of the same concept of you tweeted earlier in that day about someone had a game of games of the generation.
Eurogamer, yeah.
Eurogamer game of the generation list. I was thinking, well, naturally I need to write like 3,000 words on this and list what my games of the generation are. And I'll probably get bored with this and not actually do it, but I'm going to go ahead and say this now so everyone listening will be forced to yell at me until it actually happens. But I was thinking about these lists. It's like a game of the year list is fairly static. Right, I mean, you get your 10 games, and it's fairly mechanical, and everyone agrees on what the best 10 games of the year are. You're just listing them. But the games of the generation are a little more fluid than that. It's like, if you ask me what my games of like the last generation were like 2 years ago, it's going to be a different list than it is right now. And I think that's just a metric of how your opinions and your tastes like grow and expand as you're exposed to different things.
Well, this is a damn fine game.
I was looking up what our game of the years have been like before and since then.
Yeah, I think 2011 was the first year we all did videos.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so that was the first video year.
Before that, it was podcasts.
Like
2010 was like that big split between Mass Effect 2 and Bayonetta.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah,
and you people who picked Mass Effect 2 are still wrong.
I didn't play Bayonetta.
Well, that was the problem is that like
that was pre Mass Effect 3.
Yeah,
okay,
Wes and Brian did not play Bayonetta, so it was impossible to convince them that it was a better game.
Yeah, it's hard because there's some overlap between the games that we play, but sometimes there are games that we just don't all play.
So what we could do, we could just go ahead and go over 2010's game of the year right now. Now that Bayonetta will win, and we can just
beat Bayonetta. Shit, I'm outnumbered. Wes, come back.
I was thinking about it the other day that I think I like Mass Effect 2 less because of Mass Effect 3. Because there's all that stuff that didn't pay off.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely will agree with that because I love Mass Effect 2. And Mass Effect 3, by the end, had me so frustrated that I just can't think of Mass Effect at all anymore.
It would be like if like the end of Empire Strikes Back, that just it never came up that Luke was Vader's son.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope you'd be above such things, like you could like view a work of art on its own, but the very foundation of Mass Effect was that three game trilogy, and what happened in 2 had to have a great payoff in 3, and if it doesn't, then the stuff in 2 is retroactively harmed by what happened in 3.
This is why game trilogies are dumb, because you're never like you're often going to change writers and change focus, and like the kind of game you're making is going to be different depending on like what the audience wants.
Fuck, well, this
is why Star Wars is a really good example, because the second Star Wars movie ends with them. They had just found out about Vader. They're standing there on the bridge of some ship, staring out into this fleet, and there's like all this doubt about what's going to happen next. And then the next movie totally pays off. Mass Effect 2 ends with them all on the Normandy, the new rebuilt Normandy, separating from the elusive man. And it's like anything could happen. And then the next game starts as like, nothing fucking happened.
By the way, Shepard's on trial for some reason. Also, Reapers.
Yeah.
Also, Shepard's back on Earth. We don't know really why they kind of ignored the part where he was a criminal working for Hydra the whole time.
Imran talking about different writers and stuff. I don't know. For some reason, now I'm thinking about a Woody Allen written Mass Effect game.
I'd pay money for that.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. Or
looks like Grunt is appropriately named.
Well, at least at least it would have a consistent artistic vision. That's the problem with video games trying to do this trilogy thing. Like, teams change, and in the case of Mass Effect, like the company was bought out by a different company in between like the first and second games, and like the at first it was supposed to be like an entirely Microsoft thing. They're just paying BioWare for this trilogy, and then even that changed. And then EA comes along and says, "Well, we're going to have to screw you entirely because we're EA and we're off."
Man, so speaking of what did Microsoft pay out the ass for to stay on Xbox One or something? Was that Destiny? No,
Titanfall.
Was it Titanfall? It was Titanfall. Yes. Okay,
because there was a bunch of speculation that Titanfall was eventually coming to PS4 as well.
Right. That's
and then even
I thought.
Like the head of not Infinity War, Respawn. Said, like, well, yeah, I had no idea that they were only putting it on Xbox. That's kind of surprising to me.
We've been working on this PS4 version.
Yeah, like, he had to have staff working on the PS4 version at some point.
Or they were making it at least so it would be easy to just port it.
Yeah. Sure.
Without much work. And I guess Microsoft, they probably realized that, hey, pre-orders are down, Titanfall's our big thing. We need to make sure that people know it's never coming to PS4.
Well, is that on... what engine is Titanfall? Because I mean,
Source.
It is Source.
Yeah, it's on Source.
Holy shit!
It's not on. It's not on like their Frostbite stuff.
No, it's on Source.
That's fucking amazing.
That's pretty impressive.
And it's never going to be on Steam, which makes it hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, because it's going to be on Origin. That's right.
Yeah.
I do like to think that the developer was sitting there, then they had to go up to Electronic Arts and say, hey, listen, we really need a PlayStation 4 dev kit at some point. Could you get back? Because it's going to release soon. Oh, we can't get that. Oh, okay.
Man, I mean, I had no idea.
Titanfall 2 is going to be on PS4. It's not a...
It's going to be a Mass Effect 2 situation, where the second one's just going to be on everything.
I find this question, like, academic at best, because I'm not going to play Titanfall on a console.
No. God, it's ridiculous. I mean, I'm going
to play... Wait, no, Mark, you're not allowed to say that.
I'm not allowed to say ridiculous?
You will probably opt to play it on your computer with a controller.
Yes, I will.
Does that not put you in, like, okay, do you play any competitive shooters?
I specifically stay away from competitive shooters because they bother me. I don't like, I'm not that guy. That's the reason I don't play, like, Team Fortress, the reason I don't play anything else like that.
Okay, because if you did and you played with a controller, I'd be like, that seems counterintuitive. But yeah, I mean, the best
Quake player I've ever known played with a trackball. And not like a good trackball, like a crappy Logitech thumb one.
That's a secret.
It's weird, but like, the sort of stuff you think who would ever want to play with this sort of thing, and you see somebody like just styling on everyone else. Like, I knew this girl that played Mario Kart with like the wheel, Wii wheel, and she was like the most amazing Mario Kart player I've ever seen. She never plays any other video games, just that.
Yeah.
And she destroyed everybody all the time.
Or when you watch Evo streams and somebody comes up with like a DualShock pad and just destroys people for like good two or three rounds.
Yeah, Zangief. He uses a pad. I mean, granted, he's a Zangief player, and I'm sure 360 motions are way easier with a pad.
I wonder if he's using the pad or he's using the analog. Is he allowed to use the analog stick, do you think?
I don't know. He uses, I think, one of those Street Fighter 3.
Rip it out of his hand.
Street Fighter 4. Game pads. I think I also have one of those, but I never really use it for anything.
Zangief, year of the we need a year of the Zangief.
We do.
Do it, Nintendo.
Yeah, do it, Nintendo. Buy Zangief.
1989.
And put him in games.
Put Zangief in the new Mario game for Wii U.
Now here's what we do. The recipe for the greatest game ever. Nintendo buys Zangief. They also buy Karnov, and we get Karnov and Zangief in the same video game.
No, all they need to do is put a Zangief suit in the next Mario game.
How amazing would that be? Grab Koopas and just spinning power drive them.
Better idea, Zangief DLC for Sniper Elite. But anytime you shoot him, he just flexes and the bullets bounce off.
They just bounce off his nuts.
You shoot Zangiefs at people, and then when he, like,
yes,
makes just impact with them, he just pile drives.
No, right. So when you fire the bullet, it goes into the slow-mo bullet tracking mode, and it's just this tiny Zangief doing a spinning lariat or whatever as he drills into Hitler's testicles.
It's like the second time this has come up.
Oh god, that'd be amazing. Oh god,
would a first-person Zangief game be great? You just like wander around like. It could be a stealth game
all the time.
Yeah, you just go up to creep up on people and like either like spinning pile drive them or like spinning clothesline them, and then like it'd be random where like you end up at and maybe you're not
so
pointing
many
at the
people
next guy.
Will get motion sick.
I think like Devil May Cry would actually like legitimately be pretty cool.
Oh man, that'd be just like versus Street Thugs.
Yeah, I mean, granted, that would just be Final Fight with Hagar, but it would be Zangief
and no lead pipe.
This is not an issue because why would you play as anyone other than Hagar? I mean, what's wrong with you?
So the creator of Street Fighter 2 and like he's a producer on Final Fight has been tweeting stuff recently, like about those games, and he was saying that like they wanted to put a timer into Final Fight to make people move on faster, but there was no in-game reason for it. Like they couldn't they couldn't justify it because why would you need a timer in a street brawl? So a producer went to talk to the artist about it, and he said like the artist's reasoning was, Cody and Guy are heroes of justice, and heroes of justice are always on time. So if they're late, they get so depressed, they just stop.
That's amazing. I like
that. You know the weird thing about that? I don't think there's been a time in recorded history where that timer has actually mattered. It's like, I never ran into an issue like in the timers on like Final Fight or any of the Streets of Rage games. Have you guys?
I was always under the impression that that was just so that if you walked away from the arcade cabinet, it would eventually eat your quarter.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's a way to, like, just hang out in, like, any given, like, fight area with, like, someone that can, like, with an enemy to hang out there and let it, like, run out of time before, like, he just kills you.
Final Fight doesn't have air combos, does it?
No, it does not. It was very limited.
Yeah, there'd be no point in it.
Yeah.
Also, this is another random piece of trivia, but apparently the Hadouken was supposed to be ducked. You could duck under it. Like, that was a fundamental part of how that move worked. But the artist made the Hadouken too big, and they thought it was really nice looking, so they just changed it.
Imagine,
so, like, that fundamental part of Street Fighter as a whole was just made because the artist was like, okay, this looks better.
And you know what? Street Fighter would suck if you could dunk it under the Hadouken.
Yeah.
You can do it for Sonic Boom.
But fuck Guile.
Yeah. Well, it depends on the character, too. Like, if it's anybody other than, like, I don't know, who can duck underneath it?
Dalsim could slide under it.
Yeah. And, like, Gonka could slide under it. Yeah, Gon could. Like, he could fuck you.
It's waddle underneath it.
Or if it's like a Dragon Ball Z character, Dragon Ball Z gets screwed.
Speaking of Japanese devs on Twitter, Harada was saying today that he would like to put Tekken on Steam.
I bet he would. Go ahead.
I would play it. Tekken. They should just port that freemium thing there.
Yeah. I'm not sure I care about Tekken. I'm not sure.
Nobody really cares about Tekken, but if it's free and it's on Steam, why not? Why not just put it there and I'll, like, do one match a day?
Because I'd rather be playing Street Fighter? I don't know. It's like, whenever I play Tekken, aside from 3, and admittedly, I only ever played 2 and 3 to get to, like, the FMV endings on the PlayStation 1. Like, when I was playing this, I would rather be playing, like, either a better 3D game or, like, a way better 2D game.
See, I appreciate Tekken for all the stuff on the periphery. Like, that's the sort of thing Marvel and Street Fighter need, is that Tekken's, like, complete asshole craziness.
Yeah, it's not, it doesn't take itself seriously. It embraces its crazy.
Like, I can dress as Tiny Dinosaur up in sunglasses and a surfboard.
I'd rather be playing the new Splinter Cell game where Sam Fisher teams up with Zangief.
Oh, yes. Stealth Zangief?
Stealth Zangief.
Stealth
Zangief. Splinter Cell Red List?
just
Tom Clancy, Splinter Cell, Dasmadanya.
Slowly spinning down from like a rafter above, doing a lariat to slow his fall.
Can we Kickstarter this? Like, we don't have to take we don't have to, like, just license Zangief. We can just have a dude who spins.
With sound effects. With sound effects by Michael Winslow.
We could do, like, that Ghosts and Goblins Kickstarter that's,
oh my god.
They're making a Ghosts and Goblins game, and they submitted it to Capcom for approval. They haven't gotten approval. They probably will not get approval, but they're still planning to do it anyway.
And if they ever made their goal, they would be immediately shut down. Now, did you actually read the description of that company later on in the Kickstarter?
No.
This guy is wonderfully delusional. I guess we can put in the show notes the link for it. But he said, with our company, and by our company, we mean this guy who's not released a game ever in his life, says, we're bringing back the classics of the 80s that these other companies have forgotten about and brought them to a modern audience. And when you take a look at the pictures he's talking about, the artwork, it's like Ghouls and Ghosts. It's like all these things that other people own. You can't do this.
See, the best thing was, like, the Kickstarter pitch was, people don't finish games anymore. They should really finish more games. It's like, this is a Ghouls and Ghosts Kickstarter, right?
Yeah.
Like, nobody finishes Ghouls and Ghosts.
Nobody finished the first level.
I think it's bullshit. You, like, spend, like, $2 in the arcade, then you walk away because that game is bullshit.
I've owned copies of that game I've never finished.
Yeah. It's just too much garbage. It's just too hard. I mean, it's a grand game, but you don't need that much punishment in your,
like,
life.
That is the game that you get to the end, and then you're like, all right, now go back and collect these things and come back for an even harder method. Or
fuck defense. You. No.
So all right, Mark,
we've been... Okay, good.
No, Mark, compare Ghouls and Ghosts to Spelunky.
Well, okay, Ghouls and Ghosts is difficult, and I can't, because they're like completely two different things. It's like Spelunky is like,
wait, Spelunky isn't difficult for you?
Spelunky is like insanely difficult, but it's like it doesn't matter because you're supposed to die. In Ghouls and Ghosts, if you die, you're out of a quarter and you're probably back to the beginning of the level.
Oh well, yeah, okay. If we're throwing quarters in the mix,
yeah.
Anyway, sorry. What were you gonna say, Imran?
I was gonna say that we've managed to not talk about any topics for any structured sort of time. So let's talk about the biggest scandal in video game history.
Oh no, my resolutions.
Resolution Gate, which is just...
So
I find that name offensive in a lot of ways.
I want to preface this with that there's nothing more that I love, and by love I mean not love, than comparison videos.
Yes.
God. Oh man.
I love a good comparison video.
Especially the comparison videos of what we're going through currently, because there's not an enormous difference between the PlayStation 4 footage and the Xbox 360 footage.
And it's certainly not the sort of thing that you can count on YouTube to preserve.
Yes. So now that Digital Foundry has apparently lost all credibility because they didn't... Something Battlefield 4 bullshit. So Call of Duty Ghosts is being rendered in 1080p on the PS4 and 720p on the Xbox One.
Oh, fuck.
And I will not lie, that actually legitimately makes a difference, but I don't care.
Yeah, because it's Call of Duty. Now, if this was like something you actually cared about,
I mean, there's a number of reasons I don't care. One of which is Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Another of which is I have a 720p TV, so I mean that's nice. I'm getting the stronger system, but it's. I mean, I can't. I don't buy a bigger TV because I keep buying systems that supposedly output 1080p. So
you're missing 280p's.
He's missing 300p's.
No, wait, my math is off.
He's definitely missing P's. So let's just get that out of the way.
If it were on my PC, on my monitor, I would freak out that I don't like I'm getting a game that does not actually output 1080p.
Would you? Because you have to be a certain like distance away from the screen, and the screen has to be a certain size for you.
You can notice.
On your desktop monitor, you're probably sitting like 2 feet away. You can notice.
But I mean, on a console, it just matters to me less. In a Call of Duty game, it matters to me a whole lot less. And I guess the reason, I mean, there's multiple obvious reasons, because this is essentially console politics. This is nobody really gives a shit.
These are console warriors.
Yeah.
It's also a lot of people getting really uptight about a technical issue in a launch title.
Yeah.
Right. Well, no,
it happens. Get over it.
Everyone's right, though, about politics. I mean, it's oh no, their number is bigger than our number.
Yeah.
And like, if you're an Xbox One guy, and you've dropped the insane amount of money required to buy one right now. The thing you're in search of most right now is validation of that choice. You don't want to be told that everything is fucked and this other system is actually not even better, but cheaper, and also you've been just drinking a bunch of Kool-Aid.
Which is what I think is the real problem here. Like, this is the actual legitimate issue at the heart of this, is that Microsoft is asking you right now, for this one moment, that they're asking for $100 more for versions of PS4 games that are the same or not as good.
And this is the only real comparison we have at this point in time. It's like, you know, of course it's going to change as like more developers get more used to the program, but right now, this is the only way we can tell the difference between
them. When you phrase it like that, it sounds like what Microsoft is asking is insane. But if you phrase it in Microsoft's mindset, they're asking $100 more for access to all of your Xbox music and Xbox video content.
Well, that they
assume that
more,
you buy because
gold.
Well, but you're awesome.
But
the unlimited power of the cloud. That cannot be overstated. Yeah.
The thing is, when you say it sounds insane, unless you talk about it in Microsoft's mindset, which is,
as far as
I've been able
insane.
To tell from the last year, is pretty insane.
Yeah, it sounds insane to anybody. This is the saddest part. It sounds insane to anybody who might buy it. It doesn't sound insane to the people selling it. And that's why Microsoft has had a tragic year.
Well, I mean, if you're still there and you want, say, $500, I love the Xbox, I love the Xbox brand, I want to go take all my gold friends, and like the TV switching all sounds cool to me, like that's fine. I think that's a totally legitimate choice. If all things were equal, if they cost the same and they seem like they're going to have the same support and same better controllers and all that stuff, then I would probably have gotten an Xbox One over the PS4 because that launch lineup is better to me.
If you're going to turn around and say, I play games online and all of my friends are on Xbox Live, that's it. I don't have to question your decision to buy an Xbox. I'll sympathize with you that it costs $100 more. That really sucks, but I still understand your decision.
I'm a pretty hardcore gamer. I talk about video games all the time. I know I'm well informed But that first impression Microsoft made in, was it March, May?
Yeah.
That was what, like, colored me for the rest of the year.
And yeah. It doesn't matter, like, how much they go back on that and try to recover. They already have that image. It's like people I speak with in, like, tech circles, like they still in under the impression that the Xbox One is this terrible machine that you can't get used games on and all these other things. And just they blew this chance 6 months ago.
The problem is now that all the people that the people who give advice, like maybe Johnny Normal Customer, I don't couldn't think of a good name, does not care about resolution. But if the guy at Best Buy who does says, yeah, you're not getting as good a hardware with this, even though it costs more, then Johnny Normal Customer is only going to buy the thing that he's being told is the better value.
Yeah, that's the only point of reference he has at this point. That said, if you're the sort of person who is already trying to justify your PlayStation 1 purchase versus your PlayStation 4 purchase, you're insane because at this point in time, you already own either one of those two, and buying either one of those two right now is unjustifiable. You are already insane. You have already bought into their bullshit. So you can't be reasoned with.
This is what we say with Imran on the call, who has a pre-order.
Well, mine is like specifically because there was 1 week where I was having, like, I did time and a half almost every night, and I ended up making enough money for a PS4. So I was like, something has got to be worth this. Just going to buy one.
Yeah. And that was before you saw the launch lineup just completely wither and die. Now, would you make that same decision now knowing those games aren't there?
Like, at this point, it's legitimately like, okay, I'm going to turn it on. It's going to be cool. I'm going to update the system. Then I'm going to play Mario.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know that's not going to have a price drop between now and when the games do arrive next year. So it's not like you're missing out on anything.
The game I want is Infamous, and as long as that doesn't slip, which, that's a decent question. Is it gonna slip? Then I'm fine waiting a couple of months, because it's not going to drop in price from now till then.
Yeah, it's not like any of the games you're waiting for are going to slip past a price drop. So it's not like you're losing out on anything by buying early.
Here's the thing. I actually like launches.
Yeah.
I like launch routes. Because they make me try different things.
Yeah, now, I was in the same issue back when the 360 was released. I decided, you know, I've never been through a launch before. I want to experience that, so I'm going to get a 360. I know the launch lineup isn't amazing, but I want to be part of this experience. And it's the completely bullshit consumerist thing to do, but what the hell? We have money, right? This is what we're going to do. And I had to sit there and talk myself into the concept that 99 Nights wasn't a total pile of garbage.
You know, I kind of appreciate 99 Nights too on an ironic level. Like, this game's really bad, but it's like, it's earnest in its badness.
Yeah, God bless it tries.
I never got the memo about that being a really bad game. Like, I remember it being teased and people being excited, and then I never heard of it again. So I went to try the demo years later. I'm like, what? This is terrible.
Yeah, it was back in that weird period where we thought Dynasty Warriors was going to be a thing for any series other than Dynasty Warriors. So
I remember the reveal, and there was no indication that it was a Dynasty Warriors type of game. Like, everybody thought it was a JRPG, and they thought it was beautiful.
Yeah, I remember, I forget what magazine was still in existence at that point of time, but they were heavily hyping that.
Was that Play?
I think it was Play. It was either Play or Next Generation. No, Next Generation wasn't around at that time. But it was either Play or... No, it was Play. It was Play or Edge. But they were totally hyping up the concept. Oh, this is going to be this amazing new JRPG for the Xbox 360. So, that's great. I'm going to buy that. And this is the worst Melee bullshit I've ever seen. Why? But this is the only thing I have to play.
A long time.
Yeah, there's no reason to think about Play because nobody thinks about Dave Halverson either. I guess Dave Halverson thinks about Dave Halverson.
So anyway, different resolutions. Whatever.
Yeah.
It happens. Do you remember the Halo games didn't even make it all the way up to 720p?
Yeah, and there was, I mean, Call of Duty games didn't make it to 720p either.
Did like anything on the 360 make it up to that?
Most games are 720p, just not all of them.
Hell,
a lot of
Forza
big
games
ones
ran 60 frames per second in 1080p.
Oh wow. Yeah. Which is something apparently they're not going to do on the next one, I think.
No, it's 1080p.
They will.
It's 60 frames a second. Okay.
Yeah. Forza manages to do that, and Gran Turismo tend to do that, but you know, it's that thing with racing games, you slow down and actually look around you, everything's really simplistic.
Yeah.
There are some corners cut to get the frame right, that's for sure.
All right.
Boop.
Brian, what you been playing?
So, other than Gunpoint, I've been doing my regular Spelunky runs, but Spelunky. Spelunky. But I finally started Bioshock Infinite.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I'm loving it. It's a spectacle. I mean, it kind of like that first intro part. Like for anyone who doesn't, Bioshock 2 just didn't click with me at all. But Infinite, like that opening scene, I kind of had that same sense of wonder I did when I first played Bioshock, the first Bioshock game, when that first came out in whatever year that was.
Yeah, the opening where you go up in the rocket and get to Columbia is just an amazing piece of work.
Yeah, that was fucking rad. So it's so I'm really enjoying it. I'm not too far in. You know, I've met up with Elizabeth, and I think we're about to get on the First Lady's airship or something.
Okay, now what I just have to know, like, how long did you let Elizabeth dance?
I went around and, like, I explored the whole beach while she danced.
Okay. You weren't a monster and immediately told her to go.
No.
Okay, good.
No, and I don't know. I guess we can just talk about this now. But so one of the things that's thrown me off is I guess I don't know enough about Booker yet. I don't know what kind of character he is. But, like, my Booker, apparently, like, I'm just the biggest petty thief in all of Columbia.
Yeah.
And it's really easy too. Like, I can straight up walk up to a cash register right next to somebody standing there and rob it, and it's fine, apparently.
I didn't actually know there was a thievery mechanic in the game until my second playthrough. I was like, wait a second, this text looks slightly redder than the other text.
Is it?
Yeah, and it doesn't show up until super late. It's like until you meet up with like the resistance later on, like there is no stealing mechanic.
Yeah. Like you can search through stuff, but it isn't really considered stealing in the beginning.
There's like two or three areas in the entire game where, like, if you grab the wrong thing, the people there will jump you.
And it's weird because, like, it'll be among things that you can grab.
Mm-hmm.
See, like, okay, there's all this stuff, and then, oh, well, I got this one thing that retarded salt, and now everyone's trying to kill me.
That's really weird that only kind of kicks in later. Because, like, up to now, like, as far as I can tell, that's the only way I'm going to get enough money to, like, buy the vigor upgrades.
Yeah,
it's probably, like, a vestigial part of the game for... Like, it changed development direction.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that'd be easy to fix by, you know, I don't know, you get money from the dudes you kill because you kind of have to kill them. But I feel like I have to rob stuff. And maybe
or if you just got more money. Yeah. Like, if you, you know, weren't picking up individual coins off of benches.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, I mean, eventually, like, you're going to get more money than you know what to do with because Elizabeth just keeps throwing it at you. Like, literally throwing it at you. She does that all the time.
And, like, she has this habit of, like, you buy something super expensive at the store, and she'll just throw you, like 300 gold. It's like, you could have gave me this to me, right? And I could have bought something else, Elizabeth. Why did you wait?
Economic redistribution. Well,
that's really weird that kind of a thievery mechanic kicks in later. Because, like I said, up till now, I feel kind of shitty that... That's what I feel like I have to do to get enough money. I'm usually not that guy. I don't want to play that.
My advice to you is just focus on one or two vigors you really like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, it seems to me that's the route they've gotten with the kind of the equipment and, you know, two guns at a time, two vigors at a time.
You know, I haven't thought this out fully, so maybe it's dumb to say it, but I don't think I like the vigor mechanic in Bioshock Infinite. Like, in terms of narrative, it doesn't feel like it makes enough sense. Like, it doesn't feel like it has enough place in that story.
It feels like it's there entirely because Vigor, but the plasmids were in Bioshock 1.
Right.
And, were even really explained very well either.
Well, and in Bioshock 1, like, it was, like, a big deal that, like, you kind of inject yourself with this. Yeah. With this, he's like, oh, well, I guess I'll drink this.
Yeah, why isn't everyone using this? I can, like, use this shit to, like, move anything using the power of my mind.
Seriously, like, why aren't all these guards just fucking throwing crows at me?
Yeah.
You know? But I will say it was nice because I think in Bioshock, there were ones that you could, like, throw on the ground, but then there were regular ones. With this, it's nice that they kind of combine the two. Like, either you single-click to throw something as a projectile or you hold it down to create a trap. Yeah. So I appreciate that they did kind of streamline that, yeah.
I'm curious to see how Barry Let's See handles that stuff. Well, like, is it going to be like the old Bioshock Infinite battle system, or are they going to incorporate the newer advances that Bioshock Infinite made?
I imagine they'll it'll probably be more advanced than even BioShock Infinite. The big problem BioShock Infinite has is they try to do these amazing new things with like storytelling, but in order to make the FPS part of it work, you still had to have like ammunition hidden in mailboxes for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
So imagine, like, I would hope that stuff goes away for the parts of Burial at Sea that you're actually fighting.
Yeah.
There's stuff you can use to explain away that stuff, like maybe they're like hiding things for the rebellion or stuff like that. But yeah. I mean, there could have been in one line of incidental dialogue to just say, "Hey, we keep things in mailboxes so the rebellion can get it."
Yeah.
But they don't.
So I'm really enjoying Infinite. I'm really happy to be playing another BioShock game that I enjoy after two just didn't click with me.
Yeah, just all the things you're questioning right now, like,
yeah,
it gets explained.
No, I love that they just like straight up say, don't even worry about protecting Elizabeth or she'll be fine. Just don't worry about her.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of really nice touches. Like, you know, you're just walking around with her and, you know, she'll be kind of, you know, off in some other corner, like looking out a window or inspecting a, you know, a little arcade machine. So they did a very good job making her seem like a real person.
And also, like, she has this uncanny ability to just duck out of the way instantly. You point a gun at her, just ducks, just flits out of the way.
She knows it's a good team.
So, well, I mean, also enemies just don't go for her. Like, there's been a couple of times where like the guard's specific goal was to get Elizabeth, yep. And I just see them like run right past her.
Well, they have to take you out first. But yeah, so that's pretty much you know, the main thing I'm playing now. I just try to play one thing at a time. Yep. What about you, Imran?
Are you talking to the audience?
What about you?
What about
the part where we stay silent and yeah. while they tell us about their
right?
And Chief Wiggum comes in.
Right, we'll just go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ah.
Okay. No, your opinion sucks. Don't play that.
Oh. Let's see. I've been playing Batman, but I haven't been playing enough of that we can talk. Like that, I feel comfortable saying, "Hey, play this," or "Play, don't play it."
Okay.
The thing I would ask, like, right, just one thing is like the thing that always got me about Batman City, Arkham City. Was like the moment you wake up and just everything is full of Riddler puzzles. Is that taken care of?
There's okay. So let me toss this at you. Mm-hmm. What did you think about an open world game that has towers that you go activate?
I'd say that sounds like a lot of other open world games that I've played. In fact, virtually all open world games that weren't GTA.
Well, this has towers that you can go activate, but you activate them by solving the Riddler puzzle in them. So it's not like full of Riddler puzzles, but there's a decent bit of them.
Okay. But it's not obvious. They're just garishly ruining the landscape.
No.
Okay.
Like you go there and it's like, oh, there's a Riddler thing behind this gate and you got to figure out how to get in there.
Okay. That's a little better then. Okay. Yeah.
But it's so far, it feels like the combination of City and Asylum. So it takes away a few of the bad things I liked about City or disliked about City, but and incorporates more of the Asylum like linear level stuff.
This also takes away some of the things that maybe you liked about City.
There was nothing to like about City.
Like, there's not enough grappling points. Mm. So you have to really be good at that cape diving thing to get places fast enough, because on top of buildings, there are just not enough places to grapple.
You mean the Batman cape diving quap minigame?
Yeah, where you, like, jump off and you have to dive, then swoop up again.
Yeah.
But cool. It's design-wise, it's very safe, but I like it a little better than City so far.
Cool.
Also, the bat grapple is like really ridiculously violent if you decide to use it that way.
Is it like the grapple in Just Cause 2?
Sort of, yeah. Like that Just Cause mod where you can attach the grapple to anything and then attach it to anything else.
Yes.
It's that, but like there's a part where I'm sneaking into a police station and Alfred's specifically telling me, you know, you shouldn't kill these or do too much damage to these people, like beat them up, because they're cops. They're not, you know, they're not here to
thugs.
Ruin things.
Yeah, they're still doing your job.
Yeah. So, like, the very first thing I do is I see an explosive barrel and I see a cop and I just tie the two together. The cop just, like, goes into it and gets knocked out.
Like, out, in quotes. Yeah.
Did the barrel explode? Because as we know, you can throw a rock at the exploding barrel.
Yeah, it exploded immediately.
Oh. Amazing.
It's funny because like they go out of their way to make the cops seem like bad people. Like they're having conversations nobody would ever have about how corrupt they are. Like
that's
who they're talking? You're talking loudly in a police station about how you're trying to kill Batman to get Black Mask's bounty. Like, come on, guys! Just
yeah.
Maybe at least keep it down to a dull whisper.
That's yeah. It's kind of trope. Like even in like Dishonored, you know, that you know, two people in a house just having this very large, you know, conversation about, you know, various bad things. And
yeah,
it's just so you can listen into it.
But I'll play more of that game and I'll report back later. What else? Can't. I mean, I played more Ace Attorney, which I enjoy. It's a very Japanese game, like way more than the other two or three, four games. Like the second case is about Japanese demons.
Oh, okay, so like that's how you mean more Japanese.
Yeah,
yeah.
But that kind of explains
the sound effects I keep hearing from my wife's 3DS. She's like, "Are you playing Muramasa?" No.
Like, they kind of go ridiculous with the crazy stuff. Like, the prosecutor is a convict who uses, they don't call it in the game, but he uses NLP as his, prosecutorial trick, which is, neurolinguistic programming.
Huh.
What does that mean?
So, basically, like, it's a pseudoscience where it has its roots in propaganda and marketing where the words you say can convince people to do whatever.
Mm.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to, like, I mean, there's like a video of Simon Pegg being convinced that he wanted a BMX bike for his birthday.
Yeah, it's I keep thinking that guy's name is Dan Brown, but he's not the Dan Brown that
wrote it's the Darren book. Something, I think.
Yeah, right? I think it's Darren Brown.
Darren Brown.
Yeah, they never actually outright call it as NLP. They just, you know, say, oh, he's schooled in psychology, so he knows how to make people do what he wants. But also he's a convict and has a hawk.
Yep, Darren Brown. That guy is incredibly fun to watch, by the way.
He is.
Yeah, he is.
I'm not sure I believe all that stuff, but I think to some extent it's probably true.
You see he has a hawk. It's like he has a mohawk or he has a pet hawk? Like
a pet hawk.
Like Tom a G.I. Joe character. Okay.
Yes.
Well, cool. What about you, Matt?
I have also started playing Bioshock Infinite, though I'm not very far.
Oh, that's right.
I was just saying, I'm just past the part where even though you're told 100 times not to break cover, you immediately break cover in the most obvious way.
Yeah, and you can't not break cover.
Yeah, I hate, and this is going to probably piss me off throughout the entire game, but I hate games where it's very obvious where the trap is, but mm-hmm. the story says you fall into the trap, so you have to fall in the trap.
Yes.
I hate that.
That is basically what this game is entirely built around. Yeah.
There's one point where you're like, you know, kind of chasing after Elizabeth too, and it's like, oh, if I just cut this corner, it would be way easier to catch her, but nope.
Nope, you can't.
She'll just speed up way faster than logical.
Yeah. It just drives me nuts that I always have that philosophy of playing smarter, you mm-hmm. know, being trying to find a better way around something instead of just brute forcing your way through it. And there are a lot of first-person games that really don't allow that at all. And that's kind of why I've been loving the Stanley Parable. Because it plays with a lot of those ideas.
Yeah. It's a very smart game.
Yeah. And it's... Oh my god. Imran, before you start playing that, look through the list of achievements. Just trust me on this one.
I don't know, maybe not. Like, I think that... Like, play it for a while first, then look through the achievements.
Yeah.
Because I think that they'll break out a lot of the jokes if you didn't know the achievements going on.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. Like, people say the achievements are really, really amazing for that. But, like, I still have not seen anything about Stanley Parable. Because I want a period of time where I'm not rushed to play it or I don't feel like I want to be playing something else or should be playing something else.
Just, like, it's like a Saturday afternoon. Yeah. Just sit down with it for, like, 3 hours. It doesn't sound like it's that compelling, but trust me, you're going to get everything you want out of those 3 hours.
Yeah,
it's very much like a gone home experience in that way.
Yeah, the Stanley Parable. Well, the thing that the biggest mechanically the biggest thing that makes it different from Gone Home. Gone Home,
the
you
guns,
start at the beginning.
All the guns and all the murders.
Well, in Gone Home, you start at the beginning. You go through the story, and at the end, you've reached the end of the story. With the Stanley Parable, there are many branching paths throughout the entire game, and a lot of them lead to an ending. And as soon as you get to the ending, it goes back to the beginning, and then you're meant to maybe play through it again if you want. So when we say that it takes like 3 hours to play, it takes like 3 hours to get through like five or six different variations on the ending.
It like plays like it takes 3 hours to get to the point where like, okay, I've seen 90% of the game's endings.
Yeah.
And the rest of them you really have to work through to get to, because a lot of them are hidden.
Yeah. But what I really like about some of the endings in that game is just that it'll play with you in weird ways. And I don't want to spoil much, but there's this one called the confusion ending. Mm-hmm. And even after the confusion ending, they throw in a little callback to it later.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not sure if you're still in the confusion ending or not.
And I'm convinced you still are.
Yeah. Did you catch that?
Yeah,
after
I did.
The confusion ending, you look through one of the windows and you see the line, but you can't get to it.
Yeah. And I'm convinced you can find it again.
I tried for like 20 minutes. Oh well, we'll have to do a spoiler cast about that, or just spoil
just
the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so on to Mark. Brian, you gonna ask me what I put?
Yeah, I can. If you, Mark, what have you been playing?
I appreciate formality in this sort of thing. I've been playing Spelunky. I've been playing like Darklight, but Darklight's not worth Deadlight. Possibly also Darklight. You don't know if it didn't play Darklight or not, sir.
Darklight sounds like a bad fantasy name.
Yeah, it does. Deathlight is Deadlight or Deathlight? Deadlight.
This is
how much respect I have for this game. It's not good. Anyway, Spelunky. I am kind of pissed off of myself for not embracing Spelunky before now, because it's one of those games like you define your life before and after Spelunky. And, you know, it's probably going to be one of those deals like Rogue Legacy, where I'm going to get burned out in a week of it, because it's kind of limited. It's just a roguelite. But for right now, it's just the most amazing, addictive thing I've been experienced to for the past year. It's just pure mechanics-wise, I haven't had this much fun in a long, long time with Spelunky.
Would you kind of agree that with the statement I made a while ago, that if I were had to pick a perfect game, that it might be Spelunky?
Yeah, I could see that. Like, I would want it to be a little bit deeper than it is, but yeah, it's like 90% of the perfect video game. Okay, closer.
I'm not sure you know how deep Spelunky goes.
Probably not, because I've mastered like the dungeon mostly. And I've got through the jungle, and I'm now in the process of getting to the ice cave enough where I can tell Tunnel Man to get me a shortcut. Although I never use the shortcut, because you really need the stuff in like the previous levels of that equipment to make any headway in like the next area. So I know there's like four areas that I can tell from like the achievements, but there's probably like more stuff to it than that.
Yeah, that's. So Tom Francis, who made Gunpoint, made a post today because he beat hell in Spelunky today for the first time after 3,000 deaths, maybe.
Wow.
He finally did it, and he kind of compares it to, I'm just going to quote him here. It's a weird modern equivalent of folklore, an elaborate story about secrets and artifacts that's passed from person to person by excitement. And those of us who pursue it have memorized every logical step of the improbable tale. Some of it we've tried for ourselves, some of it many times, but until you make it all the way through, part of it is still legend, and that's tantalizing.
And that's just truly an aspect of its randomized nature. It's like every time you play it, there is something that you didn't see in the time before, and you're just it's an experience that we only got through back in the early days of like the NES and the Genesis, where like you're on the school grounds telling your friends about these amazing things you've seen in this video game you just bought. We don't really have that experience now because the internet's sort of broken it. With a game like Spelunky, everything is so new and so different every time you play. You can go on Twitter and say, oh my God, this amazing thing I just found, this amazing sequence of events just happened. And everybody has that shared consciousness of like just sharing that information.
Well, yeah, I mean, you get sequence of events that differ, but there's stuff that's set in every level. Like somewhere in the mines, you're going to find the Wadjet Eye, which lets you find the black market in the jungle. And yeah, in and the only black now market, you can buy the Ankh of Resurrection, which you need in the ice level to get inside the Moai head get the headjet, which is the only way that you can do to get to the Golden Door, to get to the City of Gold, which lets you get the Book of Deb, which lets you get to Hell.
So in order to get to the final level of the game,
but the levels are randomized.
Wow. So to get to the final level, this sequence of events has to happen. Right? In order to get to Hell, you have to like find the eye to find the rest of the stuff then, right?
You have to
do a lot of shit to get to Hell.
Yeah. Okay. Wow.
Yeah, this doesn't... I mean, I want to play this game someday, but...
You need to play it, yeah. It's surprising.
That sounds unappetizing.
It's not. I mean, it's one of those hard... It's hard. I don't want to say it's fair, because there is
It sounds crazy, but you can completely ignore it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you just, like, have fun just playing through...
It sounds crazy, but you can... Yeah, you can completely ignore it.
Yeah, just, like, spend, like, 10 hours just, like, wandering...
Well, and some of it you just kind of do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an amazing game. It's up there with... just an art style with like Rogue Legacy. I'm not sure if like I'm still gonna be enjoying it like in another 3 weeks, but for right now, just totally amazing.
So I guess we've been playing video games.
We have been playing video games. So do you guys want to play Streets of Rage 2 or Skyrim?
I mean, just make a choice and we'll play it.
Okay. Streets of Rage 2.
Okay then. Next Lotus Book Club, Streets of Rage 2. For the Genesis.
For the Genesis.
So now I get to go do my improvisational burning knuckle-like combos. Hooray.
Yay.
All right.
Can I be Zangief in that?
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, totally.
Does Streets of Rage 2 have, like, the...
Good.
Like, the almost kind of racist little kid?
Yes, it did. It did have the racist kid on the skates. The All kid right, itself then. Was a racist. It was borderline racist, the depiction of the kid. Yeah.
So everyone can get in touch with their little racist inside them.
And also their 90s kid with the rollerblades.
Same kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun for the whole family. The racist part and the 90s part.
And the punching part.
All right, so free to play 66. 56. Not 66.
We're rambling now.
Yep.
56.
I'm actually amused because Brian can't hear, and it's making me laugh.
Nope.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Thanks, Skype.